Let no tears add to their hardships as the soldiers pass along.
Hello there. This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Richwick with New Day Dawning. Thank you for joining us on Auckland Hospital Radio, your bedside entertainment system. This week I'm delighted to be speaking with Alan Fidler, Chief Coordinator of a very important commemorative project, 7 years in the making, which marks the 100th anniversary of the signing of the armistice at the end of World War I. And next week we'll hear part two of his interview on Remembrance Sunday, when I'll be asking Alan his thoughts on World War I and its consequences. First of all, good morning, Alan. Nice morning. To be with you today. What does your World War I project consist of, and what makes it so very special?
The Northumbria World War I project, as it is now, was born out of an original Tynemouth World War I commemoration project, which was established in March of 2011. It came from a few ideas I'd had over a number of years previous, looking at war grave cemeteries and war grave headstones in Preston Cemetery and family memorials inscribed with details of husbands, fathers, sons who'd been killed in the First World War but who weren't actually buried there, because only bodies which actually of people who died in Britain could be buried in cemeteries in Britain. No bodies were repatriated, barring a very few small exceptions during the First World War, simply because of the sheer logistical impossibility of bringing tens of thousands of men's bodies home. And if it was to be done on the basis of families paying for it, the view was taken that the poor couldn't afford to do it and only the rich would be able to do it. So there was a equality in death which is established in the remembrance of the Great War, which is probably one of its greatest aspects.
What's your personal interest in the project? Was it because of some family connection in the past, or are you just interested in the history of that period of the time?
No, I didn't previously know of any member of the family on either side, father or mother, who had been killed in the war. But as it turns out, as many people who watch Who Do You Think You Are on the television find out, it almost inevitably ends up in army historical records when they're tracing relatives back and someone has fought in the war. In my case, I found out a 3 times removed cousin had in fact been killed in the army in the First World War, but I was unaware of that before the project began, and it isn't something that particularly drove me anymore to do it. My interest simply was finding the enormous numbers of deaths which were recorded in the Roll of Honour, published in 1929 and republished in 1923, which showed that a small town with a population of 58,000 had suffered more than 1,700 deaths, which was a tremendous death toll from the war, something approaching, as we found out, twice the national average.
Mm. Was there a particular day which sparked your interest?
A particular day? No, mm-hmm. Not particularly. I used to walk a dog, my daughter's dog, around the cemetery, and I just took it in my head one day to think that it might be interesting with the approaching centenary, albeit it was 7 years away at that time, 2007, to have some sort of a register so that visiting relatives might be able to find the headstones that related to some of these men. That took me to the local studies library, where I found a photostat of the Roll of Honour, and more or less the rest, as they say, is history. I got together with a group of people in the back end of 2010 and said, should we do something? The original idea was just simply to take a very badly put together Roll of Honour in 3 parts and order it and possibly show the deaths each day in the library in North Shields on a screen by date. So you could go in on today's November, and you'd go in and you would see a listing on the screen of who had died on that day in 1914 through to 1918. Very soon after 2 public meetings and the fact that a large number of people came forward willing to help, it was decided we would research each of the casualties and create an online database. And from that, many other aspects of the project spun out.
How many volunteers did you have working on that project?
Well, over the whole period of the last 7 or 8 years, we've had more than 100 people who've worked on the project. Some have come and gone, some have been with us from the first, and some people have joined the project in the last year or so. We don't make any distinction, or we've never stopped people joining the project. We're still working on the project, because there's always more information to be found. And even as recently as a week or so ago, relatives will suddenly come in with pieces of information which we can scan, we can add to the database, and we get constant inquiries from family members coming from far and near, trying to find out stories about their long-lost relatives, some of whom find that we can show them the first photograph they've ever seen of the dead man.
It's been an excellent project. How did it take such a long time to complete?
Well, we only began the actual research in June of 2011, when we were fortunate to secure a room in the Linscott Community Centre in North Shields and a small grant from the council. We subsequently got a large grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund in Newcastle, £48,000. That funded us to pay our rent, because we have to pay for the room in Linscott, to do the IT work necessary to build the database, and to carry out a number of other collateral projects which we put to HLF as part of the overall project, which included commissioning the writing of a play about a man who had been executed in France during the First World War, work we did in schools, and another of our aspects, including the mounting of an exhibition in 2014, and also the holding of a public event of remembrance on the 3rd of August 2014, although when we put the bid in 2012, we hadn't the first idea of what this event was going to be and the scale it would actually have when it took place.
Mm. So where else did you look for all your information? Woodhorn has quite a database, doesn't it? Did you go there?
A confession that I actually haven't done any of the research. We got a lot of volunteers who came forward, and like the best armies, we subdivided the task into different working groups, and there were numbers of volunteers working on the Northumberland Fusiliers, some working on the Merchant Navy casualties. Tynemouth, of course, lost over 200 men serving in the Merchant Navy who weren't in the armed forces, but the threat from submarines and mines was ever present. And there were other groups working on Durham Light Infantry, Southern Regiments, Scottish Regiments. And that's the way the work progressed, moving forward, researching each man on two separate volunteers would research each man as a casualty, and then the information would be cross-checked and verified. And we initially opened the database for Tynemouth men on the 28th of June 2014, in a single day, when we expanded the project in 2015 to take in the rest of the metropolitan borough of North Tyneside, brought in Walls End, Whitley Bay, Killingworth and all the mining communities as far as Seaton Burn. Then we took the decision, as we researched men and verified the records, we would see that the database would just expand organically, so that a publicly viewable database just grew from 1,800 to where it stands currently at nearly 4,000 casualties fully researched. But we'll never in fact be fully... You can never turn around and say it's all done, because you can always find new information about them.
Mm. So on opening up the project to other boroughs, you found that the numbers of the deceased went up from 1,700 from the North Shields area alone to a total of 4,000 in the period from 1914 to 1921. Is that correct?
Well, the deaths that we take, we draw a line in the sand on deaths, generally at the date which is the last day for the grant of a Commonwealth War Graves headstone for the First World War, which was the 31st of August 1921, a date which was selected, and if a man died after that date, he didn't qualify for a war grave headstone, even if it was fairly obvious that his cause of death was his war service. Now, subsequent to that, in much later times, you can petition the commission and the army, and if you can show absolutely that the man's death was a result of his war service. Not an easy thing to do when you're trying to find post-mortem records from the 20s and 30s. You can actually get a headstone. And one of the great achievements of the project was one of our volunteers was able to ensure that her husband's grandfather was granted a headstone, which is in Churchbank Cemetery in Walls End. Although he wasn't given a headstone in 1919 when he died, he was given one in 2016 after establishing with some difficulty that his cause of death was attributable to the war.
Mm. So could you tell us about the casualty map? Tell us more about that on your website, and more about the interactive database that you've set up.
Mm. Well, the casualty map was a spin-off from the project work. The man who was the power behind the creation of the database and a lot of the IT on the project, a man called Steve Young, I was talking with him on a number of occasions and talked about the amount of casualties there were for Tynemouth in such a concentrated area, particularly in the bottom area of North Shields, along the bank sides and down near the docks. And he took it upon himself to think, well, why not if we plot these on a map? And we obtained a map from 1916 from Woodhorn, from a thing called a wards directory, which is a cross between a yellow pages and a telephone directory, because not many people had telephones then. And there were listings of people who lived in streets, but you had to subscribe to it. So if you didn't pay to be in the wards directory, your address, you wouldn't be shown at an address. But it allowed us, for the majority of men, to plot a yellow dot on a map. And this was printed and made available and had an immediate impact. And subsequently, three of us got together, and Steve created the moving map where the yellow dots accumulate over time, over periods of the war. And Dr. Jackson of the project narrated the map on a YouTube film. So now you can watch the build-up of the casualty numbers throughout the period of the war from 1914 to the last casualties in 1920 and 21. And that map has been recognised by the Imperial War Museum as probably one of the most effective ways of showing the concentration of loss in a community. It's easy enough to see a war memorial that lists men from A to Z, or it shows them from Lieutenant Colonel to Private. But it doesn't give you any idea of the spatial distribution of the loss in the community, and that's what the map does. And although some areas have copied it, we're not aware that anybody's copied it on the scale of 1,700 men. And we haven't done it for the rest of the borough because it is such a time-consuming and difficult task to do.
I was quite shocked when I saw so many yellow dots on your map, and to see that 7 or 8 men's deaths are recorded from just one street alone. How terrible it must have been for women receiving news that their husbands had been killed.
Well, the notification of deaths was done by message quite rapidly where they knew a man had died. But quite often, and even at the end of the war, there were 300,000 men unaccounted for, many of whom's deaths had been presumed, but bodies had not been traced. And there was a massive programme of work after the war to exhume sets of remains and move them to what were called concentration cemeteries, often from very small cemeteries or French or Belgian village cemeteries into larger concentrated cemeteries. And in many cases, they could not identify whose remains they were exhuming. And these men are the ones who have a headstone which merely says, a soldier of the Great War, with Kipling's aphorism, known unto God. Now, although Tynemouth suffered 78 deaths on the 1st of July, the first day of the Battle of the Somme, of the 19,000 deaths across the nation, many of these deaths were not announced at the time because they were not known. Large numbers of men were reported as missing. And then many, many months later, and we often see entries in the old newspapers, which we've searched, we've been through the Shields Daily News and the Illustrated Chronicle from Newcastle for the whole 7 years of the war period through to 1921. And you will see Mrs. Smith has been notified in her terms, nothing having been heard of her husband, he is presumed to have been killed on or after the 1st of July 1916, and this may be a message coming through in April or May of 1917. Mm-hmm. So in fact, the enormity of the loss in some of these major campaigns and battles was not apparent, with lots and lots of people immediately finding out that their husbands or their brothers or their sons had been killed.
And this was also loss of life at sea and in merchant ships and fishing fleets, wasn't it?
Oh, the fishing,
are they recorded too?
The fishing fleets are interesting because before the First World War, the government provided subsidies to trawler owners to build new vessels on the understanding that in the event of war, the vessels could be requisitioned as minesweepers. Many of the crews of these fishing boats volunteered on the outbreak of war to serve in the boat in its new role as a minesweeper. for some of Tynemouth's casualties die in the Adriatic, because minesweepers were sent out, fishing boats were sent out as minesweepers into the Adriatic Sea against the Austrian, Austro-Hungarian Empire in that area near to Italy as well. So, yes, and the merchant fleet, of course, the British merchant fleet was 80% of all the ships on the seas engaged in international trade during the First World War. An enormous toll was taken on the merchant fleet, and there is a separate war memorial for those who have no graves, and of course the vast majority of seamen have no grave, they go to the bottom of the ship, and that memorial, Tower Hill, has over 12,000 names of men from merchant navy vessels and fishing vessels who have no known grave from the First World War. Mm-hmm. If bodies were washed ashore and they could be identified, then they would be either buried locally or the family could have the body repatriated to North Shields or wherever for burial. And there are a large number of merchant seamen and fishermen buried in Preston Cemetery where the bodies had been recovered. But in the majority of cases, there is no body recovered when a ship goes down.
Could you tell us about the book that you've written? Do I understand there are two books?
At the time of the centenary outbreak of the war, we were involved with Major Eric Ingram of the Army Benevolent Fund in the staging of a concert at the Sage in Gateshead, and we called the concert The Response. That name was taken from the idea of the response of the population to the call to arms at the beginning of the war, the mass volunteering, and of course those who are familiar with it, that absolutely fabulous war memorial in the Haymarket, which is called The Response, which is dedicated to three of the commercial battalions raised by the Newcastle and Gateshead Chamber of Commerce at the outbreak of the war. So we played on the name of The Response, and a lady called Ruth Chittenden, who was a volunteer with the project, a school teacher, she's no longer with us, she lives away down south, she and I wrote a brief overview of the war as it had affected the northeast of England, and we called it The Response. So that was used also as the programme for the concert, but also we had a number of books available for general resale, and it's sold ever since. Recently, as part of the project, I began by asking the editor of the News Guardian, the local newspaper, in circulating weekly in North Shields, Whitley Bay, Wall's End, could I publish some names drawn from the Roll of Honour each week? So he agreed, and every week for over 100 weeks, there would be a listing of 10, 15 names of men whose deaths had occurred somewhere adjacent to the date of the newspaper that week, whether it was the centenary of the Battle of Jutland or the centenary of the Somme or Passchendaele. And I'd take a number of names off the very early stages of the database, which was sort by date of death, etc., and publish these names. And many relatives came forward as a result of that. The News Guardian was vital to the success of the project. I also began to write short stories as a contribution, which became established within a number of months as a regular weekly column. And I've written 280 articles for the News Guardian. And recently, since January of this year, I've been working on producing a book which draws on 150 of those articles, and I've published it recently with the assistance and support of North Tyneside Council as Articles of War. It's a book by me drawn on the articles that I've written over the period of the project from its early days in 2011 right up to press. And that book has been augmented with some pictures and images which weren't used at the time. Many of the images, of course, have come to us many years after we actually wrote the letter, the articles in the paper. So that book was published on the 25th of September, and it's not in the major bookshops because it's not economic to put books like that out that way. It's available from Keel Row Bookshop in North Shields and the North Tyneside Libraries in North Shields, Whitley Bay, Wall.
I was just going to ask that very question. Where do you get these books from? So that's the Articles of War and
called
The
Articles
Response.
Of War, and it's available in the North Tyneside Libraries, basically, and from Keel Row Bookshop, and from our workroom at the Linscombe Community Centre.
What kind of response have you had from the public about this project so far?
Well, the project has had lots of public support in terms of relatives and family members coming to us with information or coming to us to seek information. They're all universally supportive of what we've done. We never heard of any criticism. The editor of the News Guardian certainly told me he never had a letter complaining about, oh, lots of this, all this business going on up at the war every week. So it's positive in that sense. And of course, we were granted the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service, so we're recognised for what we've done. And I think it speaks for itself. The work we did has been appreciated by many, many people. But I have to say, absolutely, it's a community project driven by community members who came forward to help. And there is no one person, not me or anyone else, could have achieved what this project has done over the last 7 years. It would have been a physical impossibility to do what has been done in the way of all of the research and the spin-off projects. I mean, in 2014, we gave every school child in the borough a 36-page summation about the war as it affected Tynemouth, with a picture of the map in. And that was sponsored by lots of individual businesses and individual people who paid for individual schools. The thing cost £7,000. Now, anyone who goes out looking for sponsorship knows you don't find £7,000 of sponsorship very easily. But what I was doing was going out and saying to someone I knew, well, your business is near to that school, would you like to donate £240 so every pupil in that school can have a copy of the book? And yes, we got the whole £7,000 patched together and produced the 28,000 books. And people volunteered, even had a bunch of police officers who took time off work. And we hired vans and they went round and delivered the books to 75 separate schools. So people have always been willing to get involved in helping the project in peripheral ways. Some have business talents and business abilities. They either do things cheaply or they do things for free. So we had lots of support from the community, and I never heard of anyone complaining generally about the activities of the project.
Mm-hmm. Many congratulations on receiving the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. In fact, Radio Tyneside have also just received a similar award last week, and it's a thrill to have this honour. But some people might say, come on, Alan, why stop there? Why not World War II? Why not the Falklands? Why not the war in Iraq? Why not Afghanistan, to recognise the contribution other soldiers have made? Why stop there?
I don't think that anybody sees World War I as specifically something different to other deaths in war, but the situation of the impact of World War I on society from the pre-war period to the post-war effects, it was a seismic change in society, and it had a tremendous impact on Tynemouth and the wider Tyneside area. I think you have to get your head around the fact that the daily death toll in the First World War was something around 600 men killed every single day for 4 years and 4 months. Now, that means the other conflicts and the individual deaths, sad as they are, pale into relative insignificance, and I don't want to attract criticism on that, but what we're talking about in the First World War, given the name the Great War, is something which had no precedent before and has probably had no equal afterwards in terms of the British nation. Now, we know the Second World War had tremendous casualties as well, but British casualties in the Second World War were less than a third of what they were in the First World War. Mm. It's something that gathered my interest and the interest of the other people involved in the project. Personally, at my age and stage in life, I don't see myself now likely to be actively wanting to be doing something like this in another 20 years' time, mm-hmm. and when I shall have actually reached, if I get there, the age of 89.
I bet there's been a lot of pressure put on you to hold the baton out to somebody else then. Is there anybody who has expressed an interest in carrying your research?
Well, there are a number of issues about doing the similar exercise for the Second World War. Firstly, in relation to Tynemouth, there is no equivalent document that we had, the prime source document that the vicar and a businessman compiled in 1919 and 23, a roll of honour. There is no listing as such for Tynemouth Borough or the wider area of North Tyneside, which is an artificial construct in any case from 1974, the amalgamation of a number of communities. So it wouldn't be as easy a task, and I just wonder if there would be the interest in doing it.
Could you finally tell us about all the events which are happening this coming week as we approach Remembrance Sunday? This is your moment to advertise them, because we're running out of time. We want to put some World War One songs on too.
We decided that we had to mark the armistice, and although we're still carrying on in small way of some research, we decided to call our programme of work in the week of the 5th to the 11th of November Our Journey's End, named after a famous play from the First World War by R.C. Sheriff called Journey's End. So from Monday the 5th to Sunday the 11th at the Memorial Hall in War's End in Frank Street, which is Swan Hunters War Memorial to their employees who died in the First World War, we have a whole series of exhibitions bringing together all the large and small exhibitions we've mounted over the last 7 years, along with a concert on Friday evening the 9th of November from 7 until 11 p.m. Fairly light-hearted event. We're not going to make it into a service of remembrance. And then on Saturday the 10th we have a big day, an information day. We have 12 speakers speaking throughout the day. There's an opportunity for anyone to come and listen to 4 separate talks. We'll have a military book fair, we'll have a military display, and we'll have a number of other events going on, including some children from Carville Primary School who are coming along to sing Waltzing Matilda. As many people don't know, that the first man to make a recording from Waltzing Matilda was a man called John Collinson, who was born in War's End, emigrated to Australia, joined the Australian forces, came back to France, was badly wounded, and through the most amazing circumstances of his hospital treatment, was introduced to Sir Henry Wood of the Proms Concert, who paid for his education at the Royal Academy of Music, and the man went on to become an operatic tenor of some fame in the 1920s and 30s. So basically, from Shyam of a War's End, Australia and the Song, to becoming a famous operatic tenor.
Wow. Well, that sounds a really full week coming up in the lead up to Remembrance Sunday. And I just want to thank you for your time this week. And I'm looking forward to what you have to say in next week's programme on Remembrance Sunday itself. You have an amazing amount of knowledge. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you, Alan.
Came the two fools, one fooled me. Fooled the jolly chum, but you got into your tucker bag. You'll come waltzing with Matilda with me. A waltzing with Matilda, waltzing with Matilda. You'll come waltzing with Matilda with me. Fooled the jolly chum, but you got into your tucker bag. You'll come waltzing.